Welcome to Judd Tribe Paranormal. I'm Kelly.
And I'm John.
And tonight we are interviewing Chad Stambaugh, who does like everything in the world with paranormal. He's a paranormal investigator, author, podcast host, and internet radio show host. He has a really
good
book.
And has a full-time job.
And has a job.
Yeah, I got to pay the bills somehow.
And the most exciting thing, I mean, first we'll get into how you even got interested in the first place, but you are going for a PhD in all the metaphysics and parapsychology, and I am so jealous. I cannot wait to hear about that. I know. All right, so first question, of course, always got to find out how people got interested in the first place. And for you, I know you didn't have childhood experiences or grew up in haunted houses. You were an adult when you started believing. So what was the experience you had that got you believing in ghosts and wanting to take it further?
Well, the reason I got into it, 10 years ago now, it was my wife. She was really the one that was interested in the paranormal. And we, like everybody else, you know, watched shows. Our favorite was Ghost Hunters at that time, because Ghost Adventures wasn't around yet or anything like that. And so, you know, we watched it, and it just one evening we decided, you know, she said she wanted to get into it. And I said, well, get online and see if there's any local teams in the area that actually do it, that maybe we could tag along with or something like that, you know, and see how it goes. Well, we did some research, and we actually ended up finding a woman that had a team here in Central California in the Fresno area. And she actually also taught classes, Paranormal 101 classes, every Saturday for like, I think it was like 6 weeks. And then she took you to a haunted location as like a final, and we could do an actual paranormal investigation.
Oh, score.
So, yeah, so that's what we did. And the lady liked us so well that we ended up being members of her team. She actually brought us on as members of her team.
Oh wow, teacher pet.
Was there a cost? Yeah. Was there a cost for the school, Chad?
Yeah, there was a cost for the school, and you know, of course for the investigation. But she didn't give any certificates or anything like that, you know, saying you're a paranormal expert or anything like that. It was just the cost. It was the cost for her, for the materials and everything, and the classroom, because she actually rented a classroom through the local adult school here in Fresno.
Okay.
So we, you know, she had, that was all her expenses, and she had to pay for all that. So that's where the money went. And then, you know, so like I said, we went and did our first investigation, and had a really good, fun time. But at this point, you know, I'm still not a believer. I guess at this point, I'm still more on the skeptic side of town.
You just wanted to have a happy life, so you had a happy life.
Exactly. So it wasn't until probably, I think it was about a year later, and I had my first, what I feel, my first real paranormal experience that made me a believer from then on out. And what had happened is, one night I was home and I was feeding my grandson. He was about 8 or 9 months old. And the house we live in is my wife's grandparents' house. And she inherited it when they passed away. So she, you know, there's a bunch of stories that her grandmother was doing a lot of things when I wasn't around. So, you know, it was like personal experiences. But at this occasion, the chair that my wife sits in was one of those old style fashion rocking chairs where it's really heavy, and the only way it's going to turn is if somebody's sitting in it and you move it with your legs. And so I'm feeding my grandson, and he's like interacting with somebody behind me, you know, he's like waving and smiling. So I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. So I go, okay, grandma, if that's you sitting in the chair behind me, interacting with Gavin, do something to show me, you know, that you're there. I no sooner said that, and the chair turned a 45-degree angle
towards us.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the hairs on my arms, on the back of my neck stood out. I'm like, I wasn't scared, but I was like, oh, all right. Well, let's make sure that I'm not hallucinating or something like that. And I said, all right, Grandma, you can move that chair back to the original position. You've got me hooked, and I'm a true believer. I finished that sentence, and the chair moved back to its original position.
No.
Wow.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Wow.
Now, I wish I would have had a videotape of that.
Right?
But,
honestly.
You know, it's a personal experience, and it happened to me. So, from then on, I was a true believer in the paranormal.
God. Was that after you had taken those classes or before?
This was about a year afterwards.
And you were already involved with the group?
Yes.
No kidding.
Wow. Well, we all have those stories, the one that kind of triggered everything for us.
Did your wife have any experience like that?
Yeah, my wife, her and my daughter, who lived with us at the time, they had all kinds of experiences. For example, one time, one of the jobs my daughter had was to make sure the animals were fed. And my wife had told her, because at that time I was working at night, and my wife told her twice to feed the animals, and she had forgot. And third time, she walked out of her bedroom to come into the kitchen, and the like 8-ounce scoop that we used to dig out the animal food flew out of the bag and hit my daughter upside the head.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it flew from one side of the kitchen to the other. We're talking about probably a good 12, 13 feet.
No kidding. There's no
way it would have went from that bag and hit her like that with, you know, unless there was intent and some kind of aim.
Yeah, wow. Really.
Wow.
Oh, my God. I wonder if I'll have that aim when I'm done, because God's like, I don't have any now.
I have a few people I wouldn't mind throwing some things at, I guess.
Holy cow. All right, so you're a non-believer your whole life. You're the full-grown adult. You take classes with your wife. Then you have experiences, and you're in the group. And so what made you, I guess not what made you go to school for it, but I mean, so you're already in a group, and now you're in school right now to get a PhD in all this metaphysical stuff.
Correct.
Do you already have a master's in that?
I'm finishing up my master's right now so that I can start my thesis for the PhD part.
Okay, wow. So, I mean, we always talk about how, I mean, when I was little, that's what I wanted my career to be. That was way before you could look up schools on the internet. There was no internet. Mm-hmm. I mean, that you took it all the way serious. What made you decide to actually really go for it and go to school for this?
Well, it kind of happened after I wrote my first book, and it was on paranormal investigations, and the book was, you know, what it does is it breaks down all the pieces of equipment we use, how to use it properly, and actually how to do a proper paranormal investigation, whether you're at a fun or a historical place versus doing a private residence.
Okay.
And it was during this period of time that I'm like, you know, I'm really getting into this now, but I don't feel that I have enough education to, you know, be able to teach. If I'm going to start writing books, then I need to get more education in myself so that I know what I'm talking about when I'm writing my books or I'm doing lectures, which I do a lot of lectures.
Mm-hmm.
So I started looking into classes for parapsychology and stuff like that, and I couldn't find any of the local colleges around my area that did anything on the metaphysical or parapsychology. Unfortunately, a lot of the schools are cutting those type of classes out now, so you can't find them at an actual physical campus. And so then I went online and thought, you know, maybe I could find some online, you know, campus. And I ended up finding a place called the Institute of Metaphysical Human Science and Institute. And I checked them out, and they had a PhD program, actually different PhD programs and a whole bunch of different things. You can get it in parapsychology. You can get into in one in anomalous research. Then there's a couple other ones that you can get into. But I went ahead and went towards the metaphysical parapsychology classes.
Okay. That's awesome. You know, I get flyers all the time from the local colleges, and it's like Tai Chi and flower potting. Like, none of them have that in the brochures.
So back, backtrack a little bit, Chad. When you were in that group, when did you decide to start your own?
Well, my wife and I decided we wanted to start our own team, and we did that in early 2010 after being with the other team for about 5 years. And the reason we did that is because the other team did a lot of private investigations. Mm-hmm. We felt that they were lacking, and a lot of teams out there are lacking. And what I mean by that is you're going out there and you're doing a private investigation, and you're helping the clients, you know, see if there's something going paranormal in their house or their business, whatever. And it would come down to the point that if we did find something paranormal going on there, well, that's where this team stopped. You know, they said, okay, yeah, you got something paranormal going on, but most of the clients that we were seeing, you know, well, that's great. Now you've proven that we do have something paranormal going on, but how are you going to help us get rid of it? Or what are you going to do for us, you know, to help us out with it? And there was nothing this teacher this team was doing.
Wait. She had her own school and class, and they couldn't follow through to help these families?
All they were doing is just proving or disproving that there was paranormal activity going in the house or business. That's okay. All the farthest we go.
Gotcha. I mean, it's okay to be that if you're going to say you're that, but I mean, don't go in giving people hope and then being like, I don't
know. I mean, because,
right.
Yeah.
Well, what she would do is if they wanted, you know, help with cleansing or blessing of the house or whatever, mm-hmm. she would call in other people to do it. And so, so it got to the point where we wanted to do that, but she wouldn't allow us to be on her team and do that because she didn't want to be involved in that. So that's why we left her team and created our own team, 11th Hour Paranormal. And we went back to the people that she was referring out to take care of these house blessings and cleansings. And they taught us how to also do it.
Wow. Nice.
So that, yeah. So, and our mentor in that, you probably won't know him, but his name is Thomas Durant. And he lives in L.A. now, but when he was a kid, he actually grew up next door with Johnny Zaffis.
Oh, okay. In Connecticut.
Yeah,
in Connecticut.
Gotcha.
So he grew up with all of John's kids, and so he was into paranormal. And so he taught us everything that he learned from John. And who else do you want to learn that kind of stuff? Would be somebody actually knows what he's talking about, you know, mm-hmm. like John. So he taught us a lot of good stuff, and you know, and then he, you know, taught us, you know, how to deal with some of the darker forces that are out there and stuff like that, because they're out there. It's not prevalent is a lot of people and TV shows make it out to be.
Mm-hmm.
Using that D word almost every investigation, it's ridiculous. The percentage of actually getting those type of cases are like 1 out of 500.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not what the TV shows make you believe.
Well, of course not. Of course not.
Tune in next week.
Casper's not as fun. Yeah. Nice guys finish last.
So what's the meaning behind the name?
The meaning behind 11th Hour, my wife actually came up with it. The reason we say 11th Hour because a lot of times when we are going in and helping clients, they're at their last grasp.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the next step for them is either to sell their home, leave it, or, you know, whatever. And so, you know, it's like a time clock. You know, you get to that noon or high noon, that's time where you got to make a decision, move on or whatever.
Yep.
We are coming in right before they get to that point, the 11th hour, and coming in and trying to help them.
Clever.
So that they can take their lives back, you know, take their house back from whatever's there, you know, whatever. You know, we're coming on the 11th hour before they're ready to call it. That's, you know, the end.
I love that name.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
God, you take this more serious than I think anyone I've met so far. And I don't mean that like bashing anyone, including like even my own group or anything, but like, I just love that you're going really far with this and just being so serious and learning and helping. And so tell us a little bit about your team. I know you have a few like psychics and empaths and you guys do a lot of cleansings.
We have 7 people on the team now. We were a core of 4. Then we just brought 3 new people on. They're investigators in training, and they're learning the ropes. And 2 of those are actually psychic mediums, plus the 2 other females that were core members, my wife and our other team member. There's mediums also. My wife is an empath. She can feel things, mm-hmm. or, you know, feel and sense things. My other member, Kimmy, she has the great ability that she can actually, she can touch a building or an object and actually get an imprint from that object. It's crazy.
Wow.
That's like the stuff you see on TV, actually. That's really cool.
Yeah, but she does it for real.
Yeah.
It just blows me away. And then, like I said, our new 3 members, come on, 2 of them are a young kid and a young lady. They both have psychic abilities. She can actually see them and talk to them. And Peter, he's kind of like, he's more into the dark side stuff. Oh, he can tell when there's a dark entity in the area. Mm-hmm. And he's very good at it. Hmm. And he's also kind of like what you would call the gatekeeper. He, when we're doing blessings or cleansings and all the rest of the mediums are doing their thing, he kind of goes into a meditation, and he actually goes into the other, the spiritual world, and puts up a protection bubble around them so they don't get attacked while they're doing the blessings and cleansings.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And one of them, when you're psychics, Chrissy, like you, she's going for school for metaphysical humanistic science as well.
Right. She's actually taking the metaphysical side. And because her and Kimmy, they both have their what they call psychic they call it a psychic circle, where they bring other people in that have abilities. And a lot of times a lot of people that have joined are actually some of our prior clients that we found that are open. And one of the reasons they're having the paranormal activity is because they are light workers, what we call light workers or mediums, and they don't realize it. They're like, you know, giant lights. I like to use it when I'm doing lectures, when people talk about, you know, if they're a medium or something like that. When you are a light worker or a medium, you're like that bulb on the old bud zappers that you find on back of people's houses, mm-hmm. you know, to get rid of the bugs and stuff. And the bugs coming in because they see that bright light and they're drawn to it, and they come in and they get zapped.
Yes.
Well, light workers are the same way. They're that big ball of light, and spirits can see it from a mile away, and so they're drawn to that person because of the light. And people are now, you know, having all this activity, they're getting voices, or, you know, expanding the ability, they're seeing things and stuff like that, hearing things, and they don't realize that they're the ones that's causing the problem. So they end up learning to either go to my wife's psychic circle classes, and they either learn how to strengthen those abilities, mm-hmm. or learn how to protect themselves and shut it down.
Wow.
Yeah, I've heard like more of those classes being a little bit more abundant, learning that. So yeah, that's good. If you're a giant light, you want to be able to put a dimmer switch on yourself.
Right. So my wife is, you know, learning, getting her master's in metaphysical science, you know, and learning how, you know, the educational side of that, how to, you know, run a class and stuff like that and be able to do certain things like that. And so that's what she does on her side.
So what are those classes like that you take then? So what's the difference with yours? Because they're not just teaching protocols, you're actually learning.
Well, what you're doing is when you first start, everybody takes the bachelor's courses, and they're all the same, no matter what master's or whatever PhD you're going for. So you're going to learn the nature of metaphysics. Then you're going to take mastery, intercom principle of enhanced relationships of how to deal with people. You'll take critical thinking and self-direction classes. And you'll take some forensic science classes. And those are all the basic in the bachelor's courses.
Okay.
And then when you get into the master's, depending like what you're going to get into, like my wife, she's going to get into metaphysical concepts, psychology, innate psychic powers and what are they, how to do it. Reinvention and ordination, because after you get your master's degree, you actually can be an ordained minister through this course also, because it is a part of a church.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so you can actually get ordained.
Wow.
And then for me, what I've been taking right now through my master's is anomalous evidence and analysis. Again, I take a second class of forensic science and I get a little bit deeper into, you know, how to do scientific stuff on how to, you know, almost like cops would, using different types of propanol. And if you, you know, you go into a place and they say there was a murder here or something like that, or, you know, it's like a history or something like that. Well, I can now go in and try and validate that or unvalidate that. Is it just talk, or is there proof here that I can find that actually will, you know, validate that story?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll also take a couple psychology courses. And then from there, which I'm working on now, is picking my thesis for my PhD on what I'm going to write about. What is my research going to be on? And right now, I'm not sure what I'm going to write about yet. I have a couple ideas, but I haven't really picked one yet because I'm still thinking about it. Plus, I got to finish up my anomalous evidence and analysis course yet.
Well, I say, like Kelly was saying before, I don't think I've ever met anybody so passionate and so into what you're doing. At what time during the day do you find a time to breathe?
Yeah, what's that workload like?
I do it at night. My wife and I, it's just me and my wife here now. My daughter, she's moved out, and my grandson, you know, moved out also, you know. So it's just me and my wife here, and mm-hmm. you know, when most people are sitting back and watching TV shows, we're reading. Mm-hmm. I'm on the internet researching. You know, you got to set your priorities. Do you want it or not?
Yeah.
If you want it, then you're going to have to put the time into it.
I agree.
Yeah, it's not easy. I went back to school as an adult in my late 20s, and it's so hard.
Well, not only did I do this, but in 2013, when I started this, I was actually went back to school also at night to a community college, and I got my second AA degree in English Lit.
Oh, okay.
Because I was writing, so I wanted to make my writing skills a little bit stronger. And so I went back and took writing courses and stuff like that. And like I said, got my AA in English Lit.
Oh, very nice.
Wow.
Because if I'm going to write, I want to make sure I'm doing it good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. If you're going to do protocol, like for dummies, not from dummies. So you've had a few books now. So your first one was the Paranormal Investigations one. You have the Paranormal Dictionary, Parachronicles on the way you see things based on your blog. And your latest book now is Beyond the Veil. And that's out right now?
That has been out since June.
Okay, great. Yeah, I know that you've been doing signings, so it's Beyond the Veil, A Sparrow.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing this weekend.
Oh, are you?
Bay Area. Yeah, I'm doing a signing up there at a Paracon up there.
Oh, that's awesome. There was actually a Paracon right around here recently.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your book.
Okay, well, Beyond the Veil, the biggest reason I wrote Beyond the Veil is, I'll just put it out there, we're constantly, as paranormal investigators, being challenged by skeptics and what I call Bible thumpers. You know, they're always saying, you know, what you're dealing with is demons, blah, 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 because that's what it says in the Bible and blah, blah, blah. And I was getting tired of it. So I started doing some research and I spent 18 months tearing the King James Bible, the New International Version Bible, talking to Muslim imams through Skype over in Egypt, talking to Jewish rabbis through Skype over in New York and down in Florida, and talking to my local Catholic bishops here, and just tore the Bible part, and found more numerous places where the Bible does talk about human spirits.
Mm-hmm.
And tore it apart, you know, because there's a lot of fallacies in the Bible. I feel that God's message has been distorted by people in power, not only the organized religions, but government.
Mm-hmm.
And his message has been distorted, and there's so many truths and lies out there that I wanted to try and set the record straight.
So are you comparing, like, the similarities and the differences between all the different religions then?
Yes. Through my research, trying to show that if Jesus Christ was alive today, he would not be a Christian. He'd actually be a pagan.
Huh.
I show that how Christianity stole a lot of what we consider Christian symbols and stuff like that, like Christmas, Easter, stuff like that, that its origins were actually pagan, not Christian. The only reason that the Christian took it over is so that the pagans would start worshiping God and Jesus Christ at the same time they were doing their religion, their pagan rituals. And then over a period of time, the pagan rituals just got wiped out and the Christian religion stayed. I show that Jesus Christ was not the very first prophet coming from God, that there was actually another prophet out there called Mithras, that was born the same way that Jesus Christ was, under the star of Bethlehem, had three wise men come, and, you know, the whole scenario, but only 800 years prior to Jesus Christ.
What religion does that come from?
It comes from Mithraism.
Okay. God, so that's a lot of research. I mean, you had to go through, like you said, you're talking to people in Egypt and...
Oh, yeah. And, it just breaks it down, like I said, you know, and it shows that there's conflict, even with the parables in the Bible. You know, when you take it from the original Aramaic, and then it was translated into Greek, and then from Greek into, what was it, from Greek went to... Italian, and then from Italian it went on and on and on. But each time it got translated, a lot of stuff got translated wrong, and it started right back in the beginning with Aramaic. Aramaic, a lot of the original Aramaic is dots. It's not words. It's actually little dots. And if you mistranscribe those dots, you just change the whole meaning of what the parable was supposed to be about. And you can find that all the way through the Bible. In one section, like one section in Isaiah, it'll say something about a story about somebody. How to go? Somebody had two sheep or a bunch of stuff like that. But then you go into Matthew in the same story, and all the figures have changed. So, you know, which is the real one, the one in Isaiah or the story in Matthew? You know, so there's a lot of different inconsistencies in the Bible.
So did you find that with all the different ones you were doing, like reading the Jewish ones and the...
Yes, and even the Quran. I mean, I even go in there and I rip apart the Quran, you know. The big thing about dying and having 22 versions with die and stuff like that, that's a fallacy. And nowhere in the Quran does it say that it's a peaceful religion. It is not a peaceful religion. It's stated in there so many times that you either become a true believer or be killed as an infidel for not believing in Allah. So all these things that you see on TV and stuff like that, you know, these imams trying to pass it off that it's a peaceful religion. It's not. It's not a peaceful religion. It was based on Muhammad. When he was started, a lot of people don't realize, when he first started out and he got his message from God, or Allah, that they call, he changed it around because he wasn't getting the converts that he wanted. So to start getting the converts, he created a small army, and when he would go into a town, you either converted or he beheaded you. So you were forced to either die or become a Muslim. And it's still that same way today.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a very controversial book. It's selling like wildfire, but it's very controversial.
Yeah, I mean, anyone looking back, I mean, we're talking about things that are, you know, centuries and more old, and I mean, it can happen, not just religion, any type of old writings, you know, is it right? Are words wrong? You know, like right. You said, one thing can change a whole meaning, and, you know, there's 20 more theories, more than that, but I mean, just an example, you know, 20 people can do and come out with a different, like, actually, here's what I think that meant, and...
Right, I mean, there's only 6 books in the Bible, but there's actually over 100 books that were actually written. And a lot of the books that were written by females. And Emperor Constantine and the Council of Nicaea, when the Catholic Church was actually formed, made sure all those Bible verses were gone because they were by women. Because women were second, sometimes even third class citizens. They weren't allowed to think. They weren't allowed to have their own original thought. You weren't allowed to have your own original thought. And one of those books was written by Mary Magdalene, and it showed how Jesus was actually a man and raised a family. They actually had children. And they made sure, and even the Catholic Church today don't want that to come out, because if you create Jesus as a human being, not a demigod or whatever you want to call him, then that takes a lot of their power away from them, because if Jesus was a human, not a God brought back, you know, by God as in a human form and then died and went back, that changes a lot of people's thoughts differently. And another example, up until 1966, a lot of people thought that Mary Magdalene and Mary the prostitute were the one and the same.
Yeah, that's what I thought is the story.
Yep, they're not. Mary Magdalene and Mary the prostitute are two different individuals.
Starting to sound like Maury Povich or something. God. So are you scared at these book signings? I mean, some people must be like, oh, Chad, this book is amazing. And some must be like, who do you think you are? Like, are people freaking out on you?
I get some. I get a lot of emails or messages through Facebook, you know, who do you think you are, you know, lying and spewing these, you know, lies and stuff like that. It doesn't say that in the Bible, stuff like that. And I always come back and I get on them with the verses, you know, where it does show human ghosts and stuff like that. I had one just the other day, woman was saying, you know, that there was no such human ghost. And I said, I gave her this example. I said, you remember the time that his disciples were on the boat and they were out in the Sea of Galilee and Jesus walked across the water and they were scared? She goes, yeah, I know that story. I said, okay, you know that story. Well, okay. Well, they were scared. And one of the things they said when they seen Jesus walk across is, look, it's a ghost coming to haunt us. And when Jesus got to the boat, he says, fear not, it is I. Now, if there was no such thing as ghosts, and Jesus Christ was the right hand of God, would not have Jesus have rebuked those disciples right then and there, saying, why are you talking about human ghosts? There's no, you know, there's no such things. And he did not do that. He reassured them that it was him, not a human ghost. And they pretty much shut up after that because they don't know how to come back after me, because that's exactly what happened. Jesus actually just told them, calm down, it is me, it's not a human ghost, and stuff like that. And he did, for me, you know, there's no such thing as human ghosts. Jesus should have rebuked them right on the spot and said, there's no such thing. He did not do that.
Interesting.
Yeah, where can people find your book?
You can find it on Amazon.com.
All right.
And just look for Beyond the Veil, a Spiritualist Guide to Man, God, and Ghosts.
And another thing you use all your knowledge on all these religions for is blessings and cleansings. Now, I know we had talked before off the air, and you were saying, you know, even though there's not too many demonic things, you do deal with some dark stuff when you're doing your paranormal investigating, and you do different rituals, you know, basically based on people's religion to get rid of certain entities.
Exactly. That's a big important thing right there, what you just said, working with people's religion. You can't go into a person that is Indian, American Indian, and he believes in all that and try to use a Christian ritual. Likewise, you can't go into a Muslim house and try to use a Jewish religion-based cleansing. It doesn't work. You have to be able to work with that that homeowner or business owner's religious beliefs, because you have to have their cooperation and you have to have their belief that this is going to work. Okay, it just can't be us. It's a two-way street. Our clients have to work with us. And so one of the things we have to do for that to work is to work with their religious beliefs and their religious rituals.
So have you had a lot of success with that, Chad? I mean, they call you back and say, you know, the house feels pretty good now?
We have not had I can't say that we've had one place that we haven't been able to help. Now, it doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing you need to know when you're listening to them. It's not a one stop and everything's done. No, it doesn't happen that way. We've had clients that, we had to work for several years. We had one client we had to work for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Before we got everything done, because there was so much going on with this client. It was ridiculous. They were at the point, again, this is why we call ourselves 11th Hour. They were at the point, he runs his own pool cleaning and construction business, and they had their own house and everything, and he ran the business from there. he was so things were going so bad that his business was going under, and their house was up, was getting ready to get foreclosed on.
Oh my!
And we came in and started working with them, and we found some of the basic stuff that was going on, which was they actually went on a ghost hunt. They were interested in ghost hunting also, but they went with a woman that opened portals, did seances and stuff like that, but didn't shut the portals back down, and they did a seance at these people's house. And she opened a giant portal and never closed it down, and they were having all kinds of activity coming through the portal going on. So the first thing we had to do was close that down and get rid of all the spirits that came through that. And we had to deal with the Native American thing that was going on. They were having an Indian chief walk in their lands, and so we had to work with that and give a blessing, tobacco blessing and everything like that, and got that calmed down. Then we found other spirits there that were from the pioneer days, because the house where it was sitting was actually, in the pioneer days, a house had burnt down with the whole family in it, and the family was still connected to the land. And so we had to deal with that. And that was a tough one, because they did not want to go. In fact, we actually got it on video in EVP, where you see shadow figures come out of the one bedroom and go down the hall, and you got EVP at the same time saying, they're here to get rid of us.
Oh, wow. That's wow. Awesome.
Yeah. So it was crazy. It was like that whole investigation there was like peeling back an onion. Every time we peel back a layer, we find something else.
Jeez.
Finally, they're doing really great with that. Within 6 months of starting to work with them, they actually found a bank that would refinance their house, because they couldn't find anybody that would finance their house, refinance for them. And they went everywhere. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm not saying it was us, but, you know, it's just coincidence. But 6 months after working with us, they've actually found a bank that refinanced their house so they didn't lose it. His business started picking up, and now it's been 4 years now. It's been a year since the last thing we had to do anything with him. But his business is flourishing. He's actually got, he was a one-man job when he was doing it. Now he's got 6 employees. He's growing. They have no problems at their house or on the land around them, because it's a big farm ranch and stuff like that. So they're doing really great.
That's good.
Good.
So, yeah, so it's not like a one-stop, you know, we're going to go in there and that's it. It's done. Doesn't work that way. Sometimes it does, but a lot of times it don't.
So how were you determining that, you know, you had a Native American and pioneers? Was that with your mediums?
Yeah, we use the mediums, and, you know, we'll do EVPs and stuff like that, and we just figure out, you know, what we're dealing with by what, you know, what we get on EVPs and by what the mediums are, hearing, seeing, or feeling. And we just go from there. And then once we figure out what it is, then we have to, you know, do some research. And like with the Indian thing, we actually had a local Indian chief out here that was part of the Chichansi tribe out here. And he came down and we did a tobacco blessing and what they call a... some kind of circle. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a circle, and you do a tobacco blessing inside the circle, and then you also plant certain trees. I can't remember what tree it was, but you have to plant a tree, and it's giving thanks back to the land and appeasing the native tribe that was there. And that kind of, you know, helped take care of the Indian thing, the problem they were having.
Okay. Yeah, I've heard of that, like basically like offerings, you know, and
yeah,
you give what you take. And
exactly.
So I heard you say once before, you were talking about how some groups probably, you know, might use their mediums incorrectly and, you know, different groups do different things. Like, what are some examples of how you, I don't know, how to's and how not to's?
Well, you don't want, a lot of things I see is you don't want your mediums doing research. before the investigation. If they're a real good medium, they shouldn't have to do any research. They should be able to go in there and be able to feel, you know, whatever their talent may be, you know, feel, see, hear, whatever. They should be able to pick things up.
Yeah, agree, in all caps lock. Agree, do not research.
Yeah, and, you know, then you can kind of, like, build your paranormal investigation around what your medium is getting. And that's another thing that a lot of groups don't. They're taking, you know, their medium will tell them, you know, I feel something that's going on over here, but they're not following up on that. They're like, okay, well, that's great. They maybe do like one ABP session or something like that, and then they're moving on doing something else. They're not consistently using their mediums to find out where there may be hot spots in the area. One of the things that we like to do, I like to call it the rule of three for valid evidence. We usually don't give any type of evidence out. You know, anything we get that's just like, you know, an EVP by itself or a picture by itself or a video by itself, it's good, but, you know, it could be, you know, it could just be some kind of anomalous, you know, thing. But when I can get, for an example, one time we got our medium, we were at an investigation, and one of our female mediums felt she was getting tugged on her left shoulder, and then she felt somebody pulling her hair. Well, as soon as that happens, my team is trained. When something like that happens to our mediums, we start doing snapping pictures. We get the video towards that individual, and we start doing EVPs right in front of her. And at this particular instance, and I don't know how you guys feel about this, but we got a bright green orb over her left shoulder, and this is all happening within a minute after her saying that she felt something over her shoulder and then she got her hair pulled. We got a bright green orb over her left shoulder where she felt it. We got a Class A EVP when we asked who's here, and it gave the name of the actual deceased husband that we were investigating, his wife's house for her, and we got his voice, and she recognized his voice. And so we got all those different three pieces of evidence happening all at the same time. Wow. And so that's what I call the rule of three. You know, I've got not one, not two, but three different pieces of corroborating evidence happening all at the same time that corroborates each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's smart. Really hard. I think a lot more people try to do that now because you almost make yourself look stupid if you're just like, hey, look, I caught an orb in the kitchen. Like,
well, I mean, that's great. You got something right, you know. And I agree, a lot of orbs, 99.9% of orbs are your moisture, your bugs, what, you know, et cetera. But that 0.1%, there are, as far as I'm concerned, through my research and things that I've gotten, are real energy orbs.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely pictures of weird ones or people that have said they, you know, you've seen one and then you catch it, or, you know, maybe if it's like actually casting a shadow or its own light. Mm-hmm. I mean, that could be something different.
Correct. And the thing of it is, if you find those things, you want to start pulling other things. You want to start trying to record. You want to take pictures of that area. You want to try and do EVP sessions to see if you can get any corroborating evidence with that orb so that it validates each other. And it's hard for a skeptic or anybody else to refute because you got too much evidence all at the same time around the same person. Mm-hmm. It's kind of hard for somebody to say, oh, no, that's nothing.
So, Chad, what do you got going on now? Is any investigations coming up, or are you a little busy with the book and the show?
Well, I'm doing a lot of marketing for the book.
Mm-hmm.
We are still doing our, you know, our investigations, but this time of year we get ready to shut down from like Thanksgiving through the
for the holidays.
First of the year. Yeah, we'll shut down for the holidays. And not only is that because of the holidays, you know, families, you know, they got everything, you know, holiday things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But we also like to shut down during that period of time so we can recharge our batteries.
Yeah.
You know, because it takes a, when you're dealing, especially with some of the negative stuff that we deal with, it takes really a lot out of you. physically and mentally.
I agree.
Cool. All right. Well, yeah, you're doing a million things. That's pretty much it. So you have, so your latest book is Beyond the Veil, A Spiritualistic Guide to Man, God, and Ghost. You have other books out there. You also have your own podcast and your own radio show.
Correct.
So where can we find all these things? Let's just throw a bunch of links out.
Well, you can find my show. It's on Thursday nights, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, on WPAR ParaspeakRadio.com. That's where you can find my podcast and my radio show.
And you can go to the SoundCloud to hear the archives and maybe hear Dead Tribe Paranormal being interviewed.
Nice interview.
Exactly. And also, you can find my books, like I said, on Amazon, but you can go direct to my author's page on Amazon. Just go to amazon.com/author/ChadStamble, and it takes you right to my author's page on Amazon with all my books.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to shout that out. I noticed you had your own page on Amazon.
Yeah. I also have a DVD series out there that you can buy, and it's on paranormal safety and paranormal ethics.
Mm-hmm. It's a DVD set? What's that called?
It's exactly what it's called, Paranormal Ethics.
Oh.
It's a DVD on paranormal ethics and another DVD on paranormal safety.
I have failed as a researcher. I did not find that when I was internet stalking you.
Chad, the busiest man in the paranormal field, stand by. It was great talking to you again tonight, Chad.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, there's so much more to talk about. We'd love to have you on again sometime.
Absolutely.
Not a problem. Just let me know and we'll do it again.
All right, perfect.
Thanks again, Chad.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Bye, you too.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Dead Tribe Paranormal with John and Kelly.
Good night.
Hello, Dead Tribe. We need your help. If you have an iPhone, you can listen to us on the podcast app. If you have any other type of smartphone or on your computer, you can listen to us on Stitcher Radio. Just download the app to your phone. They're both set up on the right side of the EchoPod Media homepage. So please subscribe, leave a rating, and a review so that we can move up the rankings. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Dead Tribe Paranormal. After you're done, please listen to our other podcast, Rock Stories. In this series, we meet with music artists and bands that are out there keeping the scene alive. We capture and share their stories with you, the fans, and use their music as a soundtrack. Also look forward to new shows like Audibly Anonymous, the show where you, the listener, can anonymously share your deepest secrets. Please visit our website at echopodmedia.com and sign up for our email list on the homepage.
Hi, I'm Karen of Readings by Karen. Do you wonder where your life is headed? About work, family, relationships? Now is the time to contact a professional intuitive. I can give you the clarity you deserve to make the tough decisions in your life. Lower your anxieties and call today, 860-665-8024, or visit me on the web at readingsbykaren.com. Call today, 860-665-8024, or readingsbykaren.com. Readings by Karen, what's in your future?
Hello, world. You're listening to EchoPod Media.